It is the Gloucestercast. Gloucestercast 222. Two numbers all in a row. 222.
Wow. Those are lucky numbers.
On April 2, no less.
Wow.
Play your numbers.
Uh-oh.
Play your numbers.
I just meant spirit wise, not.
Spirit animals. Better than 666, right?
Right. And I didn't mean like watery wise. I meant spirit wise.
Spirit
wise. Twos are lucky. 222 is the lucky
number. 22 is my favorite number.
Is that true?
22.
It is.
Yeah.
22.
My street address is 22. And so then I put in my gardening book, I made 22 chapters.
Wow.
So all these things. All right. We have Eric Majors here. From Seaside Sustainability, and we're going to talk to him about what he does.
Okay, great.
You can say hi.
Hi.
People can't see you nod your head.
Right.
On the audio podcast.
Yeah. I'm nodding. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. That's right. And we have my co-host, Kim Smith, here.
Good morning, Gloucester.
All right. So this is April. Did both of you get through April Fools without any mischief?
I got a phone call last night that I hit someone's car. And I was like, and then my phone number was on the car. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? I've been at home the whole time. And then this person started getting really angry at me. And so I hung up. And I was like, go away. And then I found out a little later that it was a friend of mine. I'm like, you know, that's not very nice.
That's awesome.
So I got had.
This was the joke going around with all the neighborhood kids. Mom, there's a clog in the sink. Sorry, right? And then Nicole, for example, went to her sink, and there was a clog, a shoe.
Oh, a clog, a real clog. Oh, look, that's awesome. See, that was a lot less evil as the ones that my daughters pulled on me.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
So my evil children, Coors Light is the beer that I drink. So usually, like, I'll have one, you know, a Coors Light at the end of the day or whatever. And we're working on the house. We're trying to get the house to
right.
finish things. So we have my daughter Eloise and I were assembling a piece, an IKEA piece. We had actually a lot of fun putting it together. It wasn't it wasn't as horrible
as tell you.
assembled things that you have to put together. We actually had it was a bonding kind of deal. So anyway, I asked Kate to bring me from the house that we're living in to the house that we're renovating.
Right.
Bring me a Coors Light so I can, you know, just enjoy it. So she brings it in.
Did she shake
it? Didn't shake it. So she brings it in, and I crack it, take a sip. It was vile. sriracha, vodka.
How did they do that?
Coors Light. So They're mischief. Eloise, my oldest, and Madeline, they put a hole in the bottom, and they put everything in, and then they use tape to tape it up.
Oh my god!
Oh, rats!
There's the
rats.
Did you take like a big sip?
No, as soon as it hit, I knew.
Wow.
Nasty.
Oh,
my daughters are big April Fools people. I'm not so much, but they every year. One year, they put the saran wrap over the, on the toilet bowl.
Oh yeah.
So in the middle of the night, you go to pee, and the pee goes all over,
thank
all
God
over
it's
the
just
place. Because you know, I don't turn the light on. I just kind of like I'm kind of
oh,
summer.
So funny. That's so devilish.
They're like, why is that
they're
not making
devilish.
Noise? There's no splashing noise.
Well, you hear it's like a drum.
That's very devilish. That's so cute, though.
They are very devilish on April Fools, which is great. I love it. I love that they get that kind of thing. But Eric,
hi.
You were a teacher at the same school for 17 years.
Yep.
So you started there.
Yep.
When you were 15 years old. You
14
started,
years 14 old.
14 years old. He started. As a
graduated
teacher.
The same year I started. No, I'm kidding.
No, he looks so young to have taught for 17 years. It's kind
and
of
I'm
strange.
I'm believing you that you started.
He's a prodigy.
Very naive. You are.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, but more about, we want to really get into Seaside sustainability, this new venture.
Well, I'm from Gloucester. I read your blog every morning and listen. Mm-hmm. It's great. And I've been doing adventure education forever. Worked for Project Adventure, been an educator, have my master's, two of them in education. And so that's my, and I've gotten into in the environment over the last like 10 years in teaching and leading environmental programs around. And so started Seaside Sustainability, and really the impetus was to get kids out in the ocean to learn about, you know, all the wonderful things that the ocean provides, and all the bounty, but then all of the reasons we have to protect all these great things about it. So last year we had a program out of Manchester, and the kids learned how to fish lobster. We did some crabbing for invasive crabs. We did a marine debris trawl, so learning about the plastics in the ocean and all the stuff that we don't want in there. We did some water quality testing, seining. So the kids really got a great sense of, you know, kind of soup to nuts of what's in our ocean and all the stuff we want to protect.
What age group is that?
So last year we did, I think it was like 8 to 15.
Okay.
And that, this year actually we're doing the same thing. We're doing doing it twice out of two groups, two different weeks, only 2 weeks, in late June, early August. And you could see it on our website, Seaside Sustainability. And,
.org or .com?
.org.
Yeah, there you go.
.org. And we're partnered up with Manchester Parks and Rec. And we've also partnered up with, and I'm just spacing that, and I'm going
to
come.
You don't have to be from Manchester, though, do you?
No, no, oh no. Okay, we had people from all around. A Double Eagle, excuse me. That's who we're partnered up with, the owner of the boat. And so we've had people from as far away as Amesbury come and Marblehead. So
wow.
Yeah,
oh, that's
pretty good. And then Middleton.
There's not much. But there's not much more. There was a quote, I think, something. I forget who was it Thoreau or someone. You can mess it, something to the effect of there's no greater pastime for a child or something as messing around in boats. I totally butchered it. Right. Something to the effect.
Well, I totally agree.
Point being,
right. Like, we don't have a lot here.
I mean, Gloucester has a little bit because you have the maritime heritage, right, and you have the sailing programs. But as far as like this kind of adventure program, right, on the water, right, it's really very limited.
Yeah.
So Maritime
Gloucesters, they're great. They're great guys, and they have great programming.
Yeah.
So what is it, like a week long program?
Yeah, it's a week long program, 9 to 3. Okay. And then we also have right after that we have a sailing program. So Claude Badette has a large yacht in Manchester Harbor as well. We just happen to be in Manchester this year. And he teaches kids how to sail this massive yacht. And there's a lot of sailing programs out there, but they teach kids how to sail little boats.
Okay.
This is right. How to sail a nice,
great,
big,
wow,
huge boat. Yeah, it's a 52-foot Beneteau. Yeah, it's really nice. Mm-hmm. So and then we have other programs too. Oh, and so actually in that one, we the kids will be also doing some fishing, some marine debris trawl, and some water quality as well.
Interesting.
No brainer.
Yeah,
that sounds like a whole lot of fun. So what are some of the type of things that they do? How heavy is it on the environmental stuff, or is there any kind of physical activity on this? Or?
Well, I mean, everything is experiential, so you know, everyone's learning by doing.
Project Adventure. When I think Project Adventure, I think like
ropes courses.
Ropes courses.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Right. Team building.
But Project Adventure really is a lot more than that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, I've been a trainer. I got my feet wet in training. So I started actually way back in, I don't know, when I was 7 at Project Adventure here in Gloucester, in middle school. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. Did every kid go through that?
Well, I don't know. I only did in the
programming back then.
It must have been, but I was a camper. So I was just a summertime kid, and so I've been in Project Adventure forever. Now I'm a trainer up there as well.
Some of like your earliest memories are Project, like if you're, you know, the kids in Gloucester all went through Project Adventure.
I think you went to school, you went through Project Adventure.
And like, I think everybody has great memories of Project Adventure. Because, you know, even if you were like a nerd or if you were sporty, whatever, it didn't matter. It was kind of like the big equalizer because you had to work as a team.
Yeah.
So it was like...
Beautiful.
It was just a beautiful, beautiful thing, you know?
So we kind of do sports too. We are having some field hockey programs happening in Manchester this year. We are doing an ultimate frisbee league this year. So that's Wednesday nights up at Magnolia Woods. We have two different age groups. We have a backpacking program. So we're going backpacking for 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So what, we do a whole bunch
camp
of
camp and stuff overnight.
Yeah. We don't have. We're going into the woods.
You're going into the woods. You're not coming out till 4 days later.
Yeah, 4 days, 3 nights. Yeah,
with the children.
What
about the bears?
The children.
What about the bears?
Well, we teach about bears and lions and tigers and elephants.
Joe is just even a little afraid of.
We keep
kids safe.
I'm sure you do. Yes. I mean, you're an educator. How to do this.
Yeah.
I'd be horrified myself.
Yes.
Nowadays with all the liability and kid and out in the wilderness.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I have a question for you because we're going to talk about this later in the podcast about ticks.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you
huge uptick in ticks?
Yes. They said this year everyone's going to have a tick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's hyperbole,
they were saying that in January, and then we had this huge cold spell. So a lot of them started to come out of hibernation, and then they got clobbered by the cold spell. So we might still have a big tick year, but it may have been somewhat mitigated by this, you know.
Is some good that came from the cold spell then.
Yes. Yeah. Because
the soccer field.
A lot of good that comes from cold spells. Which we're not getting.
So when you take the kids into the woods for 4 days, what do you do about ticks?
Well, so one of the products out there is really bad, especially for nylon and tents and things, and not very good for your body. Is DEET, it is. I mean, you know,
it really works
from your knees down. Yeah. We DEET, you know, so you don't have to DEET your whole body, but get some. Yeah.
No, it's just curious.
And we teach chucking each other, and you know, take your boots off.
People spraying DEET on them is not like in the old days when they sprayed it all.
No, well, also we don't spray it.
Right.
You know, just dab it on your hands and knees down. So, yeah.
So
we have great program, and it's a lot of fun. Kids love it. Parents love it. Kind of kid tested, mother approved. Isn't that the kicks?
So you have this. So right now you're doing a fundraising thing.
Yep.
Right.
We are.
And you're actually, this seems like such a no-brainer, and the part that's the super no-brainer part about it, it's like, are you delivering?
Yeah.
So $10, they'll deliver a bag of compost to someone's house. Now, some old lady.
Because that's basically what it costs.
It's
not that much.
We're not trying to make a killing.
But they're bringing it to you.
So
like some older woman or whatever. That doesn't really, or a person that doesn't have a truck, or doesn't have this,
doesn't want to mess up their car.
Right. You get on the thing, you call them up, you get the compost delivered right to your house.
Wow, yep. That's awesome.
Yeah, so
and
we
it's going to a good, it's a good thing. Well, I'm sorry for stepping
over.
No. Why don't you explain?
Partner up with Black Earth Compost. Those guys are great. Connor and Andrew,
Andrew's my go-to guy for compost.
Yeah, he's great. He's a really good guy. And so partnered up with them, and we're selling them in free delivery for anyone in Cape Ann. And so go onto the website. You can use your credit card. You can also pay by check. And yeah, it's great. So I'm actually going to start delivering yesterday, but the weather kind of stopped. So I'm going to be doing that today.
That's so awesome.
www.seasidesustainability.org.
Okay, great.
Anything you want to add?
I just appreciate it and love Gloucester and I got to get some more of my programming in here, and so but I really don't want to step on toes, you know, in the future. So I want to make sure I partner with the right people, you know, Maritime Gloucester and Ocean Alliance and people like that.
Oh,
so
that
I want to make sure.
Think that there's a pretty big pie here.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just
especially
keeps getting
in the
bigger.
Summertime and then
it's not, you know what I mean? It's not like everybody cutting in.
Right.
The pie just keeps expanding here.
Right.
Well, I appreciate you guys, and thank you for doing what you do, and good morning, Gloucester.
Thank you, brother.
Nice to meet you both.
Thank
all right, be well. Well, that was very interesting.
Yeah, that was great.
He came in here. I originally thought he was...
From Black Earth.
From Black Earth Compost. we intended to get... we got derailed this week a little bit. And I'm really glad that we got Eric to come in. Yeah. But our last podcast, we talked about getting the Aprilla Farms and
Cedar Rock Gardens.
Cedar Rock Gardens and all these up and coming new kind of farm people going.
Yeah.
And the Black Earth Compost.
New and established.
Yeah. Kind of just to talk about these new businesses.
I know.
Poor Rosie passed.
Yeah.
You know, Rosie was your beautiful black terrier.
Yeah, she's a Scottish terrier.
Scottish terrier had passed this past week.
Right. She was really just a sweet, sweet dog that was loved by everybody who met her.
And the neighborhood. And
the whole neighborhood.
The kids especially.
Yeah.
And tell me what you were telling me how...
Tracy Corbett, Skylar's mom, wrote something that was very sweet. She said it was such a nice ritual that we had, because as the kids got older, they could look forward to walking Rosie, and they would feel very grown up, you know, just knocking on the door and having a little job.
Well, being responsible for a living being, thing.
Right, and they were all so good to her, and she's just the most docile dog that just loved to, you know.
Just perfect fit for these neighborhood children.
Right, and she was, it's very hard. Like, she was so much a part of everything we did, even, like, going downstairs in the morning.
Yeah.
Or, you know, she's not sitting on the rug waiting for me when I come home, or, you know, just...
You wrote something about Diana Peck wrote a piece, what was it called? Rover.
Why losing Rover, you know...
Is so devastating.
And
what was the premise of that? I didn't get to read it. But.
You know, I think, when you lose a family member, especially when you're older, you know, you're not with them every day like you are with a pet. And they love people so...
Unconditionally. Yeah.
You know, and I know, like, having a little pooch in the family when the kids were teenagers, if you were having a rough day or whatever, there was always your dog there to, to soften the blow. And I think people just form. And also, the article also talked a little bit about dog psychology and how dogs over the last 1,000 years have sort of been, have very much been bred to please people. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot of nonverbal communication that goes on between the dog and the owner and... I'm just really going to miss those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That little sweetheart.
Yeah.
Man, I don't, you know, I love Scottish Terriers, but I'm afraid to get another one because...
She only lasted 8 years, right? That's a short span.
That's a very short span, and Scottish Terriers die more than any other dogs I've learned now from cancer. It's like the number, lymphoma is... there's almost an epidemic of it now, and so Scottish Terriers are very prone to get it. Also, Golden Retrievers have a high rate of dying from lymphoma, and it's just, I don't know if I just want to go through that again, you know?
The pain is still fresh. I mean, I know that, you know, there'll always be a spot for Rosie in your heart and everything like that, but, you know, hopefully...
I don't know what to do with all their stuff, like her little pillow and her dog dish and her leash. I put a little, it's not like a little memorial, but it's in the kitchen, you know, in our little spot.
Oh, you got to look at that every day.
Yeah, but it was better than, because then everything was all scattered around the house, and it was like every time I walked into one, you know, a room, it was there. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. Looking at her I was looking for a little picture of her and...
That's brutal. It's going to be brutal because every part of your day,
right?
Like when you go out and film in the morning,
right,
you would take her there too.
Yeah,
every spot that your normal spots, like to go see Mr. Swan,
right,
she's alongside with you. So you got these films, and you're going to be looking over, pouring over this footage, and you're like, and here's Rosie.
Right, so she would be she'd be like in the car, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to go, I have to go film this. I'll be right back for you in a little bit. And she would just sit there like, she knew that she was going to get her time in a few minutes, and she was so patient, and she's just a very sweet little companion. And when Olivia would come home, you know, she hadn't seen Liv for months, and she would just go flying out the house and into our arms, and It's going to be very hard on Olivia.
I'm sure, yeah.
But you know what? I feel very blessed that we got to spend the last day with her, that we did.
Yeah.
Because I knew her appointment was at 5:30, and I just got to hold her in my arms all day. And what if it had happened when it was in, June, when I'm in the middle of, everybody's garden. So it was just I'm glad we had that special day.
There you go. Sorry to hear. I'm sure her feeders feel the same way, and all the people dogs can really, really relate to what you've been through.
And you were so good to send those flowers, to drop off those flowers. That was really
nothing.
Sweet.
That was nothing.
And I want to thank everybody for reaching out.
Yeah.
They're a lot of really sweet. I mean, you think, oh, it's just a dog, but it's not really just a dog.
No, hell no. So moving on, just much like we did last week.
Another
going in, we got to do the same thing. We're going to go to the same topic because we got to break out of it, right?
Right.
Coming up next Saturday, this coming Saturday, whenever you listen to this, this next Saturday is Bikini Speedo Dodgeball. Yes.
I thought you were going to go to Ticks.
No. We went to, after I talked about my dad last week, we talked about Bikini Speedo Dodgeball. It's the only way I could get out, pull myself out. It's next Saturday. And Frankie Gwynn, my partner in crime, is running the show this year. I pulled out of running it, just too much stuff going on in my life. With the new house and everything else. But Frankie does a majority of the work anyway. He is the man. And Tuesday night at 7 Central, from 7 to 9, is the pre-party. Pre-party is one of the best parts of the whole thing.
I think I remember a pre-party or two.
Yes.
At the farm.
Didn't we do the... what was the one we got?
Oh,
everybody got
dance?
Not naked, but like down the underwears, and we did the.
What was that dance?
Oh God!
Oh my!
It was some challenge or something.
Right.
Oh God! We did
a lot of people were doing. We're making videos to that.
Yeah, it was a viral thing.
Right. I'm sorry. I made the little short.
You did. You showed up on a web. Yeah, and.
I can't remember the name of the song.
In any case, right. Next Saturday is dodgeball. If you've been to Kim, other than Greasy Pole, is there anything that you could put on the level of insanity that dodgeball is?
Insanity is right.
Right? I mean, it's a spectacle.
Right. It is a spectacle.
It's just like the Greasy Pole, it is a spectacle.
Yes.
I mean...
People have a lot of fun.
A lot of love. Main beneficiary is Paws for something, some kind of animal thing.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, that's sweet.
So that's very sweet.
Okay.
So there's that. Get that going on. Did you get a chance to see the rabbit masshole audio video mashup video?
No.
You didn't play it?
No, I didn't play it.
All right.
What happened was I started to play it, and then something, then I got distracted.
If you didn't play it, all right, I'm going to play it for the people right now. Because if you didn't play it because you just thought it was some silly video, you really missed out. I'm going to play the audio. You're not going to hear it, but I downloaded it to this.
Oh, okay.
All right, here it is. I'm going to play it right now. And so I'm going to set the scene. So I saw this video clip with this audio on it.
Yeah.
And the audio is absolutely hilarious with these masshole guys totally talking in
In Massachusetts
dialect.
Was it real?
It was real audio from the guys that were out fishing, and they saw the sunfish. They didn't know what the sunfish was.
I've heard that.
So it was all clips from that put to a video when I was in Mexico with the rabbit, and he was snoring so loudly, and all of the... It just worked out perfectly. So if you haven't seen it, I'm going to link to it on the podcast.
I really have to watch.
And here, I'm going to press it right now.
I don't know what this is.
It's playing in the background.
We're seeing some shit we ain't never seen before, kid. This is Michael Bergen and Jason Foster. Steve, I hope you're watching, buddy. Jay's got a little fucking fishing hook. Are you shitting me? Oh my, look at this fucking thing. Holy shit. You want to try to pull it in? We're about ready to pull this monstrous fucking thing on this. Oh my god, Jay.
So,
okay, so
I'm gonna have the link. Okay. Click on the link,
okay.
Because this video is
I've never laughed
so hard in my entire life.
Well, let me ask you, how does the rabbit feel when you do these things? What does he say? How does he respond? What does he do?
The rabbit is the greatest. You know, he's one of the greatest human beings I've ever met. He understands that at this point he is a caricature of himself.
Right.
And we have so much love, but you know, he knows I always have his back, and I have his back. He doesn't see the thing about Rabbit is he's completely given up on. I'm convinced he's completely given up on women.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not that he doesn't like women or appreciate beautiful women, but like.
He's
the way he just
like,
kind of goes out and acts so goofy and stuff, he really doesn't give a fuck about getting laid. So he doesn't, like, it's just a completely different way to go about life. Like, you know, I try to keep myself in shape and looking nice for Kate because I want her to be attracted to me. I want to be attracted, you know, and everything else.
And vice versa.
Right. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. So he just wants to have fun and please his buddies, and you know, his buddies want to please him, and he's just a different. He is not conventional. Like, you know how like we're born to grow up, and then when you hit your mid 20s, like your parents and everyone around you starts giving you pressure to get married and stuff. Well, when are you gonna get married? When are you gonna settle down? When are you gonna have kids? Like, he. Like, has seen a lot of his friends go through things that, like, just put them on lock. Not necessarily bad ways, but he just doesn't. His thing is, no one's putting Rabbit in a box.
Yeah.
No one's going to control what I do. And,
does
you know, I love my children. I would never give, you know, nothing would come. The biggest prizes in my life are my children. But he, the way he looks at children. And he doesn't hate children, but or anything to do with marriage or the institution of marriage and children, encumbers him from being able to work at Best Buy and live in his mother's basement, but at the same time only work like 40 hours a week, but still be able to travel
everywhere.
20 times a year and go on these incredible vacations because. He just doesn't need a lot to live. You know, once you have.
Does he have a lot of siblings? Does he have siblings?
Yeah, he does. He has a sister and brothers and stuff like that.
And maybe they're all having families, and so
doesn't
feel like
pressure. He lives vicariously that way through all his friends and his family and stuff like that. But he's just a different. He's a different breed. He is not. You know, and it's funny. So when I. So some people that I've known in the past would look at the rabbit and his lifestyle, living in his mother's basement, and not being married, and they would say, and there'd be pictures of him like in these exotic locations with all these people, you know, and going to Mexico, going to all the going skiing every other weekend, and they would say things like, "Yeah, but is he really happy?"
Right.
And like, meanwhile. These other people that are, you know, the people that are saying that are working 100 hours a week and not going anywhere.
And not being so happy.
And maybe aren't so happy.
Right.
Is he so happy? But, you know, it's really like, it's just what's right for each individual, you know.
Well, yeah.
So the rabbit is a very special human being.
Yeah, well, that's good. You're not judgy of him, you know.
Not judgy. I mean, it's like the rabbit is the rabbit. He's just a great, great human being. I mean, I love the guy to death, and anyone that's close to him or spent any time with him will tell you the same thing. You know, he's a great human being. You have to look at this video because every time I look at this video.
Well, imagining that the sunfish guy, because I heard that audio, I saw that.
But it's better with him snoring loudly in between because he's like on his side like this, so the audio matches up perfectly
with the sunfish talking.
What is this fucking thing? We gotta pull it in, you know. really funny. So we have a was it last week that I did the smoked corned beef?
Yes, yeah.
So I bought another one because it was such a great value, and everybody freaked out about it.
And they still have it on sale.
There was a couple in the back case. It was double the price, but it was still an incredible value. In the back case at Stop and Shop.
Yeah, and it lasts a long time. So did you get this, the peppered carrot?
So I got it, and I contacted my friends at Pigeon Cove Ferments because I made the sandwiches were amazing.
Yes.
But I'm like, let's take it to the next level. Call up my friends at Pigeon Cove Ferments, and I says, which particular? Because they have like eight different flavors. I'm like, what one would go best with smoked corned beef?
Yeah, and they said
so. Dylan brought over peppered caraway kraut.
That's the. I think I mentioned that to you too.
You did. You said this is the one you gotta get.
Right, because that's when I put in grilled cheese. Because you know why? Because it's so crunchy, but it doesn't. It does the flavor, like I don't really want to taste garlic in a grilled cheese, you know what I mean? So, but also FYI, I think you're supposed to keep it refrigerated.
It hasn't been opened.
Even because when you buy it at the grocery store, it's in the refrigerator.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, I'll put it in there.
I think FYI. I mean, you could ask Dylan, but the...
Yeah, but they have it at, they carry it at... The crunchy place there. What's it called?
Common Crow. And it's refrigerated.
It's refrigerated?
Yeah, that's where I buy it from. Okay. And it's refrigerated. So
pepper. I'll put it right in.
That's true. That one is truly my favorite. I've been buying like a jar a week.
Oh my God. I like the kimchi too.
Yeah. Because like now I have Tom eating it in his grilled cheese sandwich. And I'm like,
oh, you're screwed now because he's gonna tune you up. Yeah. So it's fairly fair. Thank you, Dylan, for bringing it down for me. I really appreciate it.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Yesterday, so how about that? How about that weather we had there? That kind of little snowstorm.
Yeah.
We got kind of faked out. The first day it kind of rained. We're like, we're gonna be fine. Although all morning it kind of rained.
Right.
Then kind of like the snow.
I almost didn't go to yoga because the first report was I'm going to come out of yoga and it's going to be like 8 inches of snow. But then I just kept following it and I went and then I got out and it was beautiful. I mean, because it was like.
You took some gorgeous slow-mo videos.
Yeah. They
How
were
do you
huge
slow those down?
They were huge flakes.
How do you slow those down?
You know, I do it on slow-mo on my iPhone, but I'm shooting at like 240 frames per second, so that's why it looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because, really it looks. I think the slow-mo on the iPhone is fantastic.
Ridiculous, yeah.
And it was beautiful, but it wasn't like the waves. It was super high tide at Good Harbor. There was no beach. Like the waves were all the way up to the bluff, the little mini bluff, the little dune there. And then, but the waves were ginormous.
We still have a footbridge, which is nice.
Yes. And at high tide, so I went out right at high tide, and actually I went out with Tom. I'm spending, we're trying to spend more time together because he's really sad about Rosie, too.
I'm sure.
So,
he was a rock when I came by.
Yeah, he's very.
Does he kind of stuff down his emotions down?
Yes, definitely.
Because he was like a rock when I came by to drop off the flowers.
Yeah, he is like that. But he's still, you know, it's still there. But I know he's sad. And anyways, I don't want to keep going.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. See, everything is rosy.
All roads go back to Rosie.
Right. But so we went. So he has the Jeep because I really wrecked my car going off road, and the undercarriage is all pulled out, and because I pulled over to the side of the road, and you know where the storm drains are, and it was filled with leaves. So next to the storm drain was a ginormous pothole, but it was filled with leaves. So I pulled up to go photograph an owl.
Sunk down into it.
And I sunk down, and then when I went to drive away, it just pulled up. So I'm getting it fixed and everything. So he was so nice. He took me out in his Jeep.
Oh, nice.
Late in the afternoon, exactly at high tide. And I could never have gone down.
There's like three or four videos you posted, and each one was more pretty than the next.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
nice.
Thanks. Yeah, we went everywhere. We also went to Henry's, but it had stopped. And checked on Mr. Swan, but the whole road was covered with debris. So the rocks had obviously come over the little
wall
there, whatever you call it, little pebble mounds going along there. So, yeah, It was really
I was excited. But it wasn't. I was excited for it, and I'm going to tell you the reason I was excited for it.
Oh,
because
okay.
we finally, finally got my pellet stove and my wood stove installed.
Wow.
So like.
So did you? So tell me the whole thing. So did you have like a little? Did you have a sofa there? Could you sit?
No, there's no sofa. We're not living there. We.
I thought maybe you just moved the sofa.
We got
for the
we
day.
Brought beanbag chairs. Oh. I ordered pizza.
Okay.
And we sat down and we got the pellet. We had the pellet stove going.
And I'm so glad you get to do that because you might not be able to use it until like next
I
year.
I finally got it installed and like, yeah, but I'm not. You know, I'm not worried. And the reason why is because the way we've talked about this for 5 years now on this podcast. That there is no spring anymore, and there's no fall.
Yeah.
It's summer, wow. Winter, because the October is, we're having like 75 degree days in October.
Right.
We're having beautiful beach days in October lately.
Right.
And like, it isn't until like late November till you start getting any kind of cold.
Right.
Well, and then in the spring, we don't get any warm until like the first week in June.
Well, you know, there's this old saying that New England springs are predictably unpredictable. So right now we're in this cycle of it going
changing, up and down,
right, and also because of global climate change, we have a lot more moisture in the air, so we're having more dramatic storms and things like that. But
this I don't know. The last couple of summers, we've had these summers with like no rain at all. They've been these gorgeous, like every weekend, no rain outs at all.
Right. So then, but there's, I mean, I'm talking about worldwide, just in our particular area. So. But one thing people should know that is that in the old days, you would not plant your seeds until like May 31st. Mm. So people, I think for like a number of years, people got used to planting and things being a little bit warmer in the spring. So then they started putting all their seeds out. But then we could have a frost all the way up to May 31st. So it's things are different, but they're also the same in New England. Mm. You know, I don't really expect to have. I personally don't expect to have like a gorgeous Washington D.C. type of spring. You know what I mean?
No, we rarely do. Right. I mean, it's like one out of 15, maybe.
Right. I don't think. You know. I think in 2012 we had we had a warm winter, warm spring, warm summer, warm fall. That was
Eric Lord and I have had a saying for at least 10 years, like April and May are the meanest months. Because you in your head, you're thinking it's going to be nice. And you get those 1 or 2 70-degree days sunny that are like everybody's wearing shorts, everybody's out, like hormones are raging. And then, boom!
And then we got really tricked this year because we had some really warm days in February. Remember, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. People are out grilling. Craziness. But you said that there is a good thing that could come from that cold.
Yes, that cold snap. So everybody was reporting that we were going to have a tremendous season with ticks because we were having such a warm winter. So what happens is the ticks... They were even started to come out of hibernation early, like in February. Like Rosie had a tick on her in February, and but what happened now is that as they were starting to emerge from hibernation, we had this giant cold snap. So that could have really that may have cut down on the population. But the main reason why we might have some years we have many more ticks than other years, it's partly the warmth, but it's also, I don't know, I think I might have mentioned this before, if you have a very great crop of acorns, then all the acorns feed the mice. So then you get a lot of ticks on mice. You get a lot of happy ticks on little happy, well-fed mice. Then the next year, you might not have so many acorns. So then you have fewer mice. But where do all those ticks go? They have to latch onto something. Mm. So it's all...
It's creepy.
They are creepy. I'm very wigged out about ticks. I don't know. I have to change my... You know, I think there's a lot of things we can do preventively, but all the things that I always did... I still got ticks. I wasn't using DEET, but as soon as I would be filming early in the morning, like I wouldn't take a shower before I'd go out filming. I'd wait until afterwards. I'd peel off all my clothes by the washing machine, throw them in the washing machine, then get in the shower. And
well, my daughters go to soccer. You know, I haven't done it the last couple of, maybe last year. I don't think I did do it, but I might do it again. Is get put the, they get the fields in Hamilton, outdoor right. fields. They're right. all lined with places. If they roll, I'm horrified. It's when they the if they lay down, right. rolling around in the grass right. I'm horrified.
Yeah.
I'm completely horrified.
Yeah, well, that isn't so. The grass. There it's might the be a edges. Few in there. It's the edges. It's right the edges. So
I'll tell
them,
someone else to go shag the
right,
balls that
right,
go into
tell
the
them not to, to tell your girls not to be the one that goes
go
right
shagging
into
the balls.
Right.
All right, good to know. Yeesh.
But still,
yeah, I know. We're gonna do a shout out to our friend Tracy. You mentioned her earlier, Skylar. Yeah. They wrote you a nice note about Rosie. Yeah. Everything comes back to Rosie, of course.
I'm sorry, everybody.
No, it's not. It's your fault. I'm just making. But Tracy Thane Corbett lives on Plum Street. Has out of nowhere become one of my favorite artists.
She is. I think her paintings are exquisite. Just
but like, where did she come from? Like, I've known. Yeah. I met Steve. I grew up with Steve. And he married this woman that was not from around here. And, like, yeah, I kind of knew her as Steve's girlfriend, Steve's wife, you know, for a while and everything. And then all of a sudden, like, I saw her at Art Haven, like, a couple of years ago, involved with, like, the Bowie painting and stuff like that. And then now, this is, okay, here's the lesson. The lesson is, she's on Instagram now, she's
right.
starting to promote
right.
herself.
Right.
But her work is amazing.
Her drawing, you know what, like, I always look for the lift of the line, I call it, or, you know, for the quality of the drawing. And her, because that's the underlying foundation. And her drawings are beautiful. Her, you
she's
know.
Very talented.
I mean, her painting, her, she's very masterful with paint, and it's beautiful, but she really has a very beautiful line quality. Really,
I hope to have some of her work in my house.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk. Yes. I'm going to try and get her on the podcast, too.
I know. Well, we can afford her, right?
Yikes. Well, yeah. I have to build in this house and do all the work.
Right.
You know.
Don't you wish, like, 30 years ago you bought a Jeff Weaver painting? I do.
I wonder who had. There's got to be some around.
I know some people who did.
Yeah.
Who have a lot of his early stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God bless him. See, you mentioned, we were talking about this earlier off air. Well, you know, you buy your stuff because, you know, you can, you know, it's going to be, someday it might be worth more money or something like that. I've never bought something and thinking about, I've bought grills that, I can clean that up and sell it and pay for my grill hobby, but I've never looked at investment in art. And maybe this is wrong.
No, but you
but
know,
as far as a financial investment,
right.
I've only bought stuff that I liked.
Right,
aesthetically.
I think that's the way to do it. But I was just saying that if you have a choice and they're relatively similar in price, not too far away, it would just be better to get the original. Because first of all, it's the original, and you can never get a print as beautiful as the original.
Mm.
But then also, you know, if you, you know, it would have more, a print, an original would have far more value over time than
I never looked at it from that, because if I'm never going to sell it, then it doesn't matter. But anyway, so it was really nice.
When
so
you
I
die,
call.
Somebody might, one of your kids might want to keep
so
it. But some
our podcast has been so morbid. When you die, your children. Anyway, so Tracy, at last minute,
right,
we thought to call Tracy to invite her on the podcast. She could make it. She's doing a show in Newton, I think it was, that she said. But I was happy to when I talked to her on the phone to invite her, she said that she's working with James Eves doing
prints.
Canvas prints and stuff like that, or prints or whatever. And I'm going to link to her website so people can see what we're talking about.
Okay, good idea. And also perhaps, you know, we can call her and give her more notice, but maybe coordinate it with one of her shows that she will have upcoming, I'm sure, in the spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'll leave that up to you.
Okay.
So, because right, the past 4 weeks, all your assignments of pulling people in have yielded zero fruit.
Okay.
I'm joking. I keyed, you know. So I don't know if I talked about this, but we were talking about being at the house because of this storm at the new house that's being built with the beanbag chairs and everything. So I have some IKEA furniture that I've been putting off on building. And it was a perfect day
to
put some stuff together. And so my daughter, my oldest, Eloise, and I put together this is the Kallax, C-K-A-L-L-A-X, shelving unit.
Calyx.
Calyx. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Calyx.
Have you done any IKEA stuff?
Yes, lots.
Have you done the Calyx one?
No, but I know what it's. That's how you say it, Calyx.
Okay, Calyx.
Because Calyx is a type of flower.
Oh, okay.
So
I did not know that. Yeah. So this has 8 different cubby holes. It's a big rectangle with partitioned off.
So can you spell it again? Did you say C A?
K A L L A X.
Oh, okay. No, then I'm probably wrong.
All right, well, it's okay. No. But the point is that so I got this piece.
Okay.
The piece that cost a couple hundred bucks. It wasn't very expensive. And it come in a box that's not huge. But I guess the whole idea behind IKEA is when you have furniture that takes up big areas of space because it's already put together.
Right.
Like the retailer has to have big amount of space that they're paying rent on that they have to recover.
Right.
This stuff for certain pieces, obviously, different people, different styles or something. For a children's room, I put a bed together before that was not IKEA.
And was it challenging?
I don't know how many swear words came out of my mouth. Toby actually, I paid Toby to actually put the thing together.
That's funny.
He, to no discredit to him, it was never. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It was just crap. Yeah. IKEA is so well engineered.
Well, also, when you think about it, they have to make the directions so that they are understood by people in 150 different countries and 150 different languages, right? So they have to really, really, really figure it out. We put together a lot of IKEA furniture, and we've never...
It was not hard.
It's not hard.
It was probably 2 hours, but the money that we saved...
This is like a wall shelf?
It's about the same size of this desk if you cut it this way.
Oh, okay.
About that high. The pieces are about that thick.
Okay.
A high white gloss.
So, the one thing everybody should know about IKEA, you probably already know this, is if it says mount it to the wall, whatever piece it is, you really, really should, because they fall, they're not weighted very well.
Yeah, yeah.
So they fall over very easily, and a lot of people have gotten injured from, particularly from IKEA furniture. And I can see that, we got these beautiful dining room chairs from Restoration Hardware, for example, and they're not weighted properly either. So they have a tendency to tip over backwards. I think that's there's something, beautiful, handmade, old-fashioned furniture was, designed to, with these kind of things in mind. These are more,
this is for children's room.
Right.
You know what I mean? The aesthetic in this house, my first house that I built, it was colonial, Saarinen's colonial. We bought some timeless pieces and stuff like that. This house, I really wanted to do something different.
Yeah, fresh.
It's more modern.
Fresh and modern.
With more sharp angles and lines and stuff like that. This furniture just...
Right, like a whole room of IKEA, that's a little boring. But you just mix IKEA in with other stuff. And I have this fabulous little cart from IKEA with all these drawers. It's great for drawings, what I mean? I have a couple of those in my office. My desk is an IKEA table because I could adjust it, It was like $100.
If you're building a house and you don't actually run through IKEA, I think you're kind of doing yourself a little disservice. Because just little pieces here and there can save you quite a bit of money.
I love IKEA.
That's pretty good. I like it too. Coming up, the Great Gloucester Cleanup / Earth Day.
Yeah, that looks like a good, really good event. It's going to be great for the community.
It seems like every year Gloucester does Earth Day a little bit differently.
Yeah, and I think it gets
which is cool.
I think it gets expanded a little bit too, doesn't it?
Well, there's more groups now.
Yeah.
So you told me that there's kind of four core
there's
groups.
There's four core groups. Donna's group, 1 hour at a time. Gloucester Clean City Commission, One Ocean, One Love Shop, and Cape Ann SUP.
SUP.
And the, do you ever say SUP, or do you always say SUP? I never know.
I say SUP, stand-up paddleboard.
Okay, So. I never know. I mean, I just see it, Anyway, but these are the places, and people have a choice. Cripple Cove, Pavilion Beach, Main Street, St. Peter's Square, and Eastern Point Lighthouse. Okay. And also there's a party afterwards.
Are they doing anything at are they doing anything at the brew pub? Because the brew pub used to have like bands like afterwards.
Oh really?
And
no, this, well, I read that the One Ocean One Love Shop is doing a party afterwards from 11:30 to 2
At their shop.
That's what it said in the. This
All right,
one,
we're yeah, gonna find so out more we'll information, out. And we'll okay. add a link okay. in the show notes. Maybe okay. I'll try to get a hold of Donna and see if she's gonna do a post about this.
Yeah. She I'm sure she is.
Donna is all about this.
Right.
Gloucester Stage, shout out. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, shout out to them because they're nominated for 8. And then I don't know how to say these awards. It's IRNE, Independent Reviewers of New England. So the acronym IRNE, Independent Reviewers of New England. So the thing that was. Caught my attention was that Israel Horowitz is nominated for Best Play for Man in Snow, and then we all love Lindsay Krause, and she is nominated for Best Actress for Lettuce and Lovage, and also Myra.
Yeah, she came in.
Yeah, was it Myra or Maura? I can't remember how to pronounce her name. I'm sorry, Myra. I'll call you Myra, even though it's not spelled like Myra. But she's the Best Supporting Actress.
From Lettuce and Lovage?
From Lettuce and Lovage. Oh, okay. So the two of them. Wow. So it's spelled M-A-R-Y-A. So I can't remember. Is it Mara? Maybe it's Mara. M-A-R-Y-A.
I'm looking at these pictures. My daughters and I happened to... here's the cast right here. It is...
Myra Lowry. Do you see her
yeah.
there?
Yeah. M-A-R-Y-A.
Y-A, right.
Maria. Man, geez, how the hell do you say that?
Yeah. Maybe it's Maria. Oh, I bet it's Maria. I think that's right.
Maria? No. That was a fun podcast. Remember there was Benny Sato?
Yeah. They were wonderful.
They were great, yeah.
And she is married to Bob, the director.
Right, Bob Walsh.
The artistic director. They're a couple. Yeah. So anyway, so it's very exciting, I think.
Well, because 8 of these awards.
Right.
They're in our backyard.
Right, and huge shout out to Heidi. You know,
Heidi Dallin.
Does so much with publicity for the stage company. She's really...
It's not just publicity.
Right.
She's
everything.
Like the everything. Then.
Everything.
Well, if she's not there, that place falls apart.
No. Well,
it doesn't necessarily fall apart, but like you probably need 4 or 5 people to fill her shoes.
Right.
She does the children's programs.
She does all the kids' programs.
Else.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
We love Heidi.
We love her.
We haven't had, I guess we haven't had her on lately because we haven't had the
Well, the season hasn't really kicked in. When the season kicks in, she'll be up our ass. We won't be able to get her out of the office.
Don't say that.
You know how Heidi is. She starts talking about acting. God, she's the best. We love Heidi.
We love Heidi.
I love her. Right? Let me see. What else we got here? So, I want to give a shout out to the guys at Cape Ann Chimney and Hearth who did my wood stove and my pellet stove installation.
Yeah.
Very professional, very clean installation.
Beautiful.
They did a
it
great
job. It just looks
job.
Beautiful. Yeah. You should send people to your face. You should put that up in our in our little
put what up?
Put your picture up that you posted of your pellet stove with a beautiful fireplace surround.
The pellet stove?
Yeah.
The one I did?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, put that
maybe.
Up for our show so everybody can see the beautiful work that they do.
It's so beautiful. It
really does look
there's
really
nothing.
Nice.
Oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't want to leave that place. I don't even have it. So I'm standing around because I don't have any furniture there.
Aww.
So I'm standing in front of it like for 4 hours and like just kind of pacing back and forth, admiring it. That was my thing yesterday.
Aww.
Yeah.
Do you have a date? A move-in date? You've got it.
I don't have a time. I keep every time I say one and we blow through it. I've given up on giving dates.
Aww.
But I will say this. The awesome guys that have been working on my house, they really kind of put their nose down to the grindstone, and
they've had a lot of
activity the last couple of weeks.
Oh, that's tremendous!
They've been great. They've been really great to work with.
Yeah,
and Padre Construction.
All the pictures that I've seen just look stunning. So I'm so excited for
it's wonderful.
Yeah, very excited for you.
My buddy Will just came in. Will is a part of the Massachusetts grill Weber Grill grill mafia. Yes.
A fellow
his
killer.
his username on the Weber Kettle Club is Nor'easter. There's not many of us from the Northeast, is there?
I think there's a few. Joe's the leader.
No. No, there's you and I, then there's the guy from Chard is from Connecticut.
The guy in Worcester. Order 66 or something.
Is he from Worcester? I thought he was from like South Shore, Norwood or something. I forget.
Auburn, maybe.
Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, really? What do you like to grill?
I like to grill chicken, is my number one, but I think I grill just about everything on a grill, meat, all kind of roasts, vegetables, corn, lobster.
What brought you to Weber Grills in particular?
I've always been a griller for a long time, gas and charcoal, and I had this grill I really loved. It was a patio classic charcoal grill, and I had a Weber Smoky Joe before that, but my patio classic, it was a nice grill, and it just wore out after a long time. And then I started getting some Webers, and they're just so beautiful. I love them. They're
timeless.
Timeless, the classic, that beautiful shape, right?
They're really timeless. They really are timeless
and durable. So, Will, explain. So he bought, well, we did a trade, right, for the blue stainless steel performer.
The navy blue one.
Was that what it was?
Yes, a blue SSP stainless steel performer,
which is the first generation. So he got that one, okay. And he's in the. Is it all done?
I think it's pretty much done. So what I'm going to do is, I was talking to my wife yesterday, I'm going to make that her grill.
Wow.
I think. she doesn't like the grill that much because she sends all her hair off, her arms on a cheap gas grill like 20 years ago, and she's a little afraid of it.
She's afraid, yeah.
So I told her, I'll do all the cleaning, I'll do the setup. It does have a gas assist.
Okay. So what year was that grill? Do you know what year?
1997.
That grill was the, and this is, wow. That's 20 years old.
Wow.
And that thing will produce food better than any gas grill out there.
Yeah.
20-year-old grill.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got, people are probably sick of hearing me talk about this. No. But how many times I bought expensive stainless steel grills that never lasted more than 4 years.
You mean those big things that people have on their porches and stuff?
On their porches. And they rust out from the bottom or whatever. These grills.
They always look cruddy.
You're talking about gas grills.
Gas grills. Did I not say that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, these gas grills. So then, like, what got me, what really hooked me was when the full-size 22-inch kettle, the first one, was given to me.
Right.
It was pretty well beat up.
Yeah, but
encrusted with remnants of cooks and everything else, and finding this website, Weber Kettle Club, they have these cleaning guides.
Oh, really?
And they take you through the process, and literally you take a razor blade scraper to the bowl, and it comes down to the porcelain finish, the shiny black porcelain finish, like brand new.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. You brought this thing back to life.
Is it like multi-coded or something?
I don't know what their process is. I mean, Will can attest, like some of these grills that we find and fix up.
They just come right back.
Right?
My grills are the hardest to clean because I use them all the time. When I buy a grill from someone else, usually the stuff comes right off because they don't cook that much. A lot of people don't cook that much. So they clean up pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then if you cook a lot, especially if you do a lot of smoking, the stuff gets really thick on the inside.
My husband does a lot of just like really basic backyard grilling, and we just have the plain old black one, and he never cleans it, and he just cooks on it all the time, though. And I mean, he just kind of like pushes stuff out of it and stuff.
I think the other thing is, you know, I only started on charcoal a couple of years ago, but there, I mean, YouTube and like these, there's Barbecue Brethren, you know, there's a lot of members there that are very helpful, and there's so many people that have posted their techniques and videos, especially because you can see it, so it's not just words written. You see it, how it's supposed to work and everything else, that it just, it's, there's so much information out there, and it's really not that hard.
Well, something you just said really piqued my interest. How do you grill a lobster? Have you done that?
I haven't.
A lobster? Well, I have, but I think Joe has to try it, since he's probably got access to a few lobsters. You cut them lengthwise.
From the underside, right?
Yeah, from the underside. Just so you basically have
two halves
of the lobster, and then usually do the meat side down like 4 minutes maybe, and then
do you baste it with anything?
Yeah,
first?
Put a garlic butter or something on the bottom, and then you turn it over and you put some butter and stuff in the top.
Oh,
and you let the butter kind of cook in.
And then
the lobster finishes it off.
Then the shell side is down. So then you're cooking it with the shell side down the second half.
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's pretty awesome.
Wow.
And I've also done a lot of shellfish. Like I'm not as crazy about mussels. My family, but stuff like oysters or clams.
Mm.
I like clams come out really good. The little neck clams.
So do you just do you just put those right on top of the grill and put the lid on? And how do you do the little necks?
You put them on the grill with the lid on, and you gotta keep an eye on it, because if you overcook them, they become like really rubbery and terrible.
Right.
But
you do a low heat or high heat quickly? With high heat or?
I'd say medium direct heat, and then they start to pop, and they pop open, and then they're done.
Right, that's how, because when you normally cook them.
Oh, so you cook them in the you don't open them up halfway and then put anything inside them.
You're cooking them with the
shell closed.
Correct.
Oh wow.
You put them right on the hot grill,
mm-hmm.
and then they, after a while, I know you can't see me, but they start to pop open.
Yeah.
And
well, if you were cooking them on top of the stove, the minute they pop open, they're done. You wouldn't cook them past that.
Is that the key?
Yeah, with clams, the second they pop open, they're done.
And then you could put some kind of mixture in there to flavor the clams a little.
God.
And when you cook the lobster, is the lobster on high heat or medium heat?
I'd say direct medium.
Just direct.
When I say direct, I mean indirect or direct. Usually, if you have indirect, you have coals on one side and
I've seen how Joey does that.
No coals on the other side.
But with lobster, it's direct and about medium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm gonna have to try it. I always my theory why I never do it is because every once in a while I get a lobster that's just about gonna die. It's still just barely, but I can't sell it to the wholesalers.
Right.
So I'll get it and I'll put it on. I'll have a cook that it was left over and the coals are still kind of going.
Yeah.
I just throw it on there.
Right.
And it just, the heat cooks it like it's boiling in its own juices and stuff like that. And it's good and everything, but
I like that.
His idea.
Good. Yeah. Because
I always think
good.
It's going to dry out the meat. And I'm like, the whole idea for lobster for me is it should be succulent and the juices should be running down your chin, you know.
Yeah, it came out good. I haven't done it in a while, but it was one year when lobsters were really cheap. So.
Well, probably too. It's probably not too dried out because there's a lot of moisture in the whole. You know what I mean? There's a lot of moisture behind, in the shell and around the lobster. And
when
stuff.
You turn it over, then you add some butter. So the shell's down and the butter's kind of in there.
Holding in. Just like a cup. So the butter just kind of goes inside there.
That's
I'm going to have to try it now. He's got me going.
I know.
I can't do it until the summer when the prices come down, because the price of lobster right now are ridiculous.
It is.
So, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Oh, you're so funny. We've got so many here.
that they're a fortune right now. I'd like people come down. I don't even want to tell them what the price of lobsters is because I'm embarrassed. Said, yeah. Because of the price in the summer, it's a third of the price now. And really? Like,
it's not much more.
It's like, yeah, it's like, wow. You know, and then like, oh, I'd rather, like, especially people I know, I'd rather be like, we don't have any.
Right.
There was one summer that were like $3.99 a pound or something.
Yeah, that was something just crazy. That was just a couple years ago, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so I did a lot of them then.
All right, well, there you go. Will, thanks for popping in on the podcast.
Yeah, it's super nice to meet you. Thanks.
We're gonna have a grill event.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's probably going to be the first week in June, maybe the first Saturday in June that I don't have my daughters.
Okay.
I think we're talking about doing it maybe at Camp Spindrift.
Oh,
and
how exciting. And just have at it.
And just yeah, have, because I'm going to kind of combine it with local kind of grilling, because yeah. I have that relationship with the Fosters.
Right.
Foster's Grill Store,
oh,
and they sell
so
Weber's.
Fun.
And then yeah. I'm going to bring my Weber buddies down.
I could make cornbread or... potato salad.
Potato salad.
That right. would go.
We'll talk about that. So anyway, thanks everybody for thank you guys for coming. Kim, thank
okay.
you.
All right.
Shout
thanks
out to
too.
Eric Majors from SeasideSustainability.org. We'll see you next week, guys.
Okay.